Well, I wonder what for you was the most frightening ride in a fairground. Some of you are thinking to yourself, I can't remember going on a fairground, but you did at some point in time, I'm sure. Were you frightened by the dodgems? Were you frightened by the hoopla stall? Were you frightened by the Big Dipper? Oh, yeah, they're all going, oh. Some of you are turning green, I can see. Matching outfits and all the rest of it. I suppose for me, the most frightening experience was riding the Big Dipper. I only rode the blessed thing because my elder brother was calling me Scary Cat. Scary Cat didn't cover half of what I was feeling. And before it got to the top of the bit where it goes really slowly, then I was just apoplectic. I can't spell it, but it's a good word to say, isn't it? And down the blessed thing went, and it was twice for me, that Big Dipper, the first and the last time. And I've never been on one since. But I'm in the grandchildren age now, you know, when granddads are meant to be really brave and they take their grandchildren in hand and do all the lovely things with them that they want to do. I've managed to brainwash all my 8 grandchildren. I whispered to them when they were babies and said, don't go on a Big Dipper. Don't go on the dodgems. Granddad doesn't like them. And all that kind of thing. It all went to pot the last time I went to visit my family in Japan, because much to my great horror, my son Paul had booked us 4 days in Disneyland in Tokyo. I had a theme-orientated room in a Disney hotel. I woke up to monkeys on the ceiling and wardrobe doors that looked like jungle greenery. To say it was interesting is putting it mildly. It's also a total lie. It was, but I managed to survive. I managed to survive. The dips seemed a little bit bigger than what they used to be. And at that time, my left knee replacement operation hadn't taken place. And I was able to say to my 3 really excited grandchildren, Granddad needs to sit down. If you've ever tried to sit down at Disneyland, it's a bit of a hard job. The only time you can sit down is when you've paid them for food. But I managed to sit occasionally. Eventually the grandkids, especially Kazuma, who was the eldest, managed to see through Grandad's bluff and say, never mind, Grandad, I'll hold your hand if we go on this one. Well, I mean, what can you do when they tell you that? You just have to go on the blessed thing, don't you? It was awful. You might prefer the dodgems, banging into each other. They're okay unless you've got some nutter behind you who's determined to knock you into oblivion. And I did go on the dodgems at Tokyo Disney World because I thought my son was stood in the hamburger queue. He wasn't. He jumped into another dodgem and came up behind us. It was an absolute nightmare. Perhaps the devil drives the dodgems, who knows. Well, however well we prepare ourselves, there'll be those unexpected bumps and shocks on fairground rides. And it's the same with this spiritual roller coaster that we've been on since Ash Wednesday, leading to today, the 5th Sunday of Lent, commonly called Passion Sunday. It's the time when the sort of movement of Lent begins to change. We go on this spiritual roller coaster, which finally stops on Easter Sunday and runs on for another 50 days until Pentecost. When people watched that film some years ago now called The Passion of Christ, many people came out of the cinema or even sat in the cinema in tears. We experience that same sadness and joy as we remember the death of a friend. It makes us weep as Jesus wept in the story of Lazarus. Isn't that verse the shortest verse in the Bible? Jesus, oh, you're nodding your head, so I must be right. There's more than two of you nodded, so it must be true. Jesus wept, it says. You know, it's a reading when it comes round in the lectionary. I always puzzle about how you need to say Jesus wept. You know, there's loads of ways of saying it, but it's still a telling verse. It makes us weep as Jesus wept and rejoice again when he returns to life. Now, when I remember all those years ago on that old roller coaster, there were instructions preparing us for the ride. It said, sit in the seat. I thought that was a foregone conclusion. Hold on to the rail, hold on to the rail. I thought my knuckles were going to come through the skin. And Jesus provides a similar notice for us today, because we can face an ending physically, knowing that we can find new life when we have faith in Jesus. And the journey to Calvary isn't an easy journey to make, but beyond it there is resurrection. Behind the tomb, like Lazarus, we can step out and find new life. Now that's a dead easy sentence to use post-resurrection Christianity. Totally different ball game if you're a follower of Jesus in the first century, when you see things happening that don't seem to fit together, when hopes and amazement that you had in the fact that you were following someone who appeared to be the answer that had been promised for so long, and then it's all dashed to pieces. I suppose death is just one of those things about life that we have to cope with. I've got a friend who's got this attitude, death is never going to get me. And perhaps we sometimes feel like that. Sometimes perhaps want to feel like that. When people die young, for example, through sickness, we're sometimes left asking why God didn't answer our prayers. Why didn't Jesus, through someone, come and touch the one we loved? Or why the Holy Spirit didn't breathe new life into the person? Echoes really the story. If only you had been here, Lord, they say to him after the death of Lazarus. Like me, perhaps you've encountered so many people who've been devastated by God's apparent absence in their crisis and pain and grief. You may have had that experience of a very dear friend saying, if only you'd been here, it would have made it so much better. The ending would have been the same, but you'd have been here with me to support me. And sadly, that's been inflicted by the church. The church has taught people over the years how God makes and breaks, gives and takes, has our lives all planned out like a little road map, which takes us from A to Z, and we can't do much to change it. But if we look beyond that image, I think a false image, of a precise God who has complete control over everything that happens, we find the image of a God who searches for the lost, embraces us in love when we return home after squandering our wealth, prodigal son, and all of that. The message that Lazarus is ill is heard by Jesus, like all our prayers, but there's not the immediate response that everyone hoped for. Simply a few prophetic words that we didn't read in John 11 verse 4, that this has happened for God's glory to be seen. God doesn't ignore our prayers. Jesus doesn't stay away because he's too busy. He reaches out to us from a distance with a deep compassion. Now, are we more than friends of Jesus when we follow? Because we are the children of God, he holds us like a mother holds her infant, or the father embraces his long-lost son. And we search for each other through our grief. Jesus wept when he saw their grief, and this is what he does with us. He does the same when he sees the oppression in the city of Jerusalem, that people don't understand that peace comes through following his teaching. He weeps in solidarity with us. The Lord is here, is the message. We need not die. Now, the person who is not healed is not loved any the less by God than the one who is, but rather serves God in a different way. The dignity with which they die, the encouragement they give through illness, the courage through their disability, the strength they show in grief, the hope that shows through even the most lacking of hopeful situations. And being a disciple for Christ is not the reserve of the young and the healthy, but a calling for all of us at every single stage of life and living. For Lazarus, sickness brought death. But we are shown how powerful faith in Jesus can, be when he walks from the tomb. If we are like Martha and Mary, we'll know that in the presence of Jesus there is healing and life. You know, that phrase in that story always touches me immensely. If only you had been here, Lord, she says. If only you'd been here. What a thing to hear from a close friend. Many people are walking in the shadow of death, yet in our churches the Lord is here, standing amongst us, breathing the Holy Spirit into those who believe, so that we may never die. Now, when we try to hold our breath, and some of you would know that I was cheating, even before I admitted to it. But when we hold our breath, we struggle, and realize we can hold it no longer. We have to take that deep intake to bring us back to life. Where we live our lives or control our church by human nature, I think the message is clear. We will surely be like dry bones in a valley which remain lifeless. The question that comes to Ezekiel, what do you see? I see dry bones, he says. You can almost hear the despair in his voice. There ain't anything going to happen here. They're dead as dodos, this lot. Nothing is going to make a scrap of difference. But to be controlled by the Spirit results in life and peace. We will weep in the valley of dry bones as Jesus wept when he looked at the city of a people who didn't understand that what they needed was peace. But we can rejoice when the Spirit breathes new life into people and into the church. Now, I don't know how it's been for you, but I know how it's been for me, that my faith journey has been like a roller coaster. You know how much I love those, in which emotions are taken to the highs and lows of joy and despair and laughter and weeping. But where there is faith, and where we have allowed Jesus to breathe the Holy Spirit into us, there will always be life. The Spirit breathed when the bones and the sinews and the muscles came together. The breath of God breathed in that vision of Ezekiel's new life into what was dead. So we needn't fear the spiritual roller coaster, because Jesus prepares us through the rising of Lazarus to see that the ride might be frightening, but there's great celebration at the end of it. Now, you've heard preachers, and some of those here as well today, the way that we can bang on about John's gospel being different from Matthew, Mark and Luke, and how John places stories in very important places, in a phrase that John often uses, in order that they may believe. And this story of the raising of Lazarus is a precursor to all of that that Jesus does when, to use the scriptural text, he turns his face steadfastly towards Jerusalem. The passion begins with that steadfast facing to Jerusalem. We need not fear the spiritual roller coaster, because Jesus prepares us through the raising of Lazarus to see that the ride might be frightening, but there's cause for great celebration at the end if we allow the Spirit to hover over our chaos and create something new in the darkness. That's the story, isn't it, that comes strongly through the book of Genesis, as it tries to bring some sense and meaning to who we are and what we are. In the beginning, God, the Spirit of God, brooded over the face of the waters. Before anything was, God is, and His Spirit was at work. And if the dry bones of humanity can rise up from the valley filled with the power of the Spirit, so can our failing churches up and down the country. Places plugged into life support machines, struggling to know who and what they are and how they can fulfill the Great Commission. The quality of life can be much better. So why not let God create something new? The challenge is there for all of us. Jesus died for all, so that all people should live no longer for themselves, but for Him who died and was raised to life for them.